ask you guys, what is on TV right now taking us off of TV? Is there like a golf event or something, or what's going on?
NASCAR. I think it's NASCAR. I didn't realize this. Like, I am not a NASCAR guy.
Dude,
I have
me
never
either,
been
but
into
what the
NASCAR.
Hell's on TV where we're not? I don't
I
get
guess
it.
They race every single day. Like, am I missing
really?
Something? Because, well, they were racing last night.
I thought
night.
It was on Sunday.
That's what I thought. I will plead complete ignorance on NASCAR. I don't know anything about it. I don't care about it. Yeah. I know
there
a lot
was
of people
a race
aren't
last
to go
night,
for it.
It was like the PT Cruisers on a dirt track with the wings on the back of the car.
That's what I'm saying. If there was
why
a race last
right
night,
now?
Why is there a race again today and then the big race is on Sunday? I don't know. I guess that's the way it goes. But let's be honest. I mean, TSN, like every other sports network around the world, they've been waiting for some live sporting events, and this would be considered a live sporting event. So I guess there was a rain delay and it pushed into our time slot or whatever. So, yeah, we're not on, but we're on radio. We're online, and you can still catch us on the website. If you go to tsn.ca, you can watch the show. I had a jacket on. I pulled the seersucker out today for the first time in about a year.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
I was going to wear it, and I had it on, and I got the email from Le Grappler around 10 to 4, and I said, all right, I'm not going to waste it on
Bring it like tomorrow. We'll have it on a mail-in Friday.
Right.
If we're on TV. Like, we're going to have to find out if we're on TV, then let's do it up. Like, I've just been doing the button downs. I don't know if you guys got the – oh, you would have got it. I'm not sure, Hayes, if you got
I
it.
I got it
the,
from Carrie. Yes,
Carrie,
I got it.
Did you get the – now, a lot of that is just I wear what she laid out, the dress shirt with just the button open. That's
right.
All – I was actually quite proud. I was like, you know, I don't think I'm very stylish whatsoever, but I was proud that I was at least in the stratosphere of what she was trying to
I think you've been pulling it off. I saw someone tweet earlier today that you have the best style on Overdrive.
I was going to write back.
Yeah, it was
to
his
this.
Brother.
Exactly. It was Darlene McLennan.
Account.
It was my mom. Yeah, it was a burner account. It was
I'm
mine.
Looking at it right now. It's Ashley Barnes. Ashley writes in going, hey, Noodles, you always have the best style. No offense to O-Dog and Hayes.
That's top,
today,
though. Like,
by the way, I'm I-Dog. Eye of the Hurricane.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But let's talk about Noodles and how he could possibly be considered the best
dressed. It's
not even
close.
Like, O is the best dressed. Like,
yeah.
Admittedly, O is the best dresser. He
the
is
the worst thing about you, Hayes,
overdressed.
And I'm not trying to insult you, is I don't think Noodles really cares, but I think you care and you I don't know.
That's not true. Why do you think that I don't care? Like
I just think Noodles, if someone was like, here's a suit that you can wear on TV, you'd be like, all right, man, I'll wear that.
Yeah, like, I'm pretty laid back when it comes.
Yeah.
The thing is I'm so plain, like I want three colors. I want black, I want blue, or charcoal gray. Like, that's it. I can't, there are times where I have envy when I watch Craig Button on TV. Because Craig has it all. Like, Craig has the puff, and
he's dialed in. And that's the thing about Hayes. I think Hayes thinks he's Bradley Cooper, but... he looks like Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah, I'll admit that. I'm glad you brought up Craig because I was kicking myself. Like, I did that's hockey hit a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, I had never done that before. We're at home, and I'm like, I'm going to dress the way I basically dress on the show. And Dan Salem writes and goes, you know, jacket and shirt, but no tie. So I'm like, all right, I'll pull out the burgundy jacket with whatever shirt I had. And I thought I was somewhat put together. Now my hair is awful. Like I'm cutting it this weekend.
Wow.
I gave my wife the green light. She's gonna take it down to the woodshed.
Dude,
and I might
do what
be wearing
I did.
A
just
hat
cut
on
it
Monday.
Short, where it's like it's just you don't even have to use gel. It's like your hair is what it is, and it's done. Over.
I'm doing
Game
it.
Over.
I'm doing it this weekend. It's happening. So on Monday, I'm gonna have a different look. But outside of the hair, I thought, okay, I'm looking okay. And then I go back and I review it, and Craig and Gino, they got the pocket square going. They're sitting more. You know, structured than I am. They had, I guess, posture that I didn't have. And I'm watching the tape. I'm like, what the hell was I doing? Like, why didn't I sit up straight? Why didn't I put a pocket square in if I'm not going tie? Like, it's the worst. When you think you're getting it together and you're beside Craig, if you're beside O,
Yeah.
They take it too far. Quite frankly, they make everyone else look bad. And I think that's a little bit insulting. And probably they should scale it back. We shouldn't be expected to scale it up. They should scale back.
I think you do enough. Like,
that's what should happen.
I think you have to have a mentality where you're presentable. You don't overdo it, but you don't underdo it. You just kind of you slide in there at a 6 out of 10 on the effort level.
Well, and there's no TV today, and that somewhat pisses me off. So you wait till you see what's coming up after the break. There's going to be the tank top.
I want the tank top
hat
and the toque.
Go for it.
I want the toque. I want that toque so bad.
I'll try to find the toque, but the tank top is coming up.
What happened is I think that comment came off like the Grappler put out on the Overdrive account, like, what 2020 we thought, like, is that what's trending right now? What we thought 2020 was going to look like, and
no,
what
it's like
looks
plans
like right now.
And then 2020.
Yes.
Right.
So basically, like, everything went to crap.
Right.
You know, in other words, everyone knows what 2020 has been all about.
Right. And it's funny because I thought I saw Ryan Kessler. His was pretty funny. Did you see his on Twitter last night? So he had himself scoring a goal like 2020, him arms in the air. And then the reality, it showed it looked like a hip joint. Like, I think he's had hip surgery or hip replacement.
Yeah, his career is over, basically.
Yeah, it was a giant ball bearing, and it was kind of like stake around it. It looked like the inside of his leg, which was kind of unique.
The best one I saw was the one I sent to you guys. The Mike Medano on the stretcher is outstanding. Some guy put that together. My plans for 2020 was him, like, stabilized on the stretcher.
No.
And then 2020 was him falling off of the stretcher.
The best one out there is the one showing, like, a seagull. And he's, like, plans. And then it says 2020, and it's Randy Johnson holding a baseball.
Yes, I saw that. That is
that
good.
One, that couldn't have happened in a – like, that's a one-in-a-million shot. Like, Randy Johnson destroyed a bird. Like, it – you know, it's sad.
By the way, guys, I hate to tell you this, and I don't want to, like, get into it. It's not my fault, but I've had a couple bird deaths in my backyard in the last 2 weeks. I have, like, a deck that has the glass, not like pillars.
Oh, so
and
they're
these
flying
poor
into
birds
it.
Are wheeling in here trying to do something, and they're hitting the glass, and it's game over. Like,
well, that would startle you. That's tough for them. But like, you're sitting on the couch, and 9 o'clock at night, this bird goes wheeling in there. Like, that's tough. Like, that would scare you too. You know?
Oh, definitely, man. They're moving.
Yeah.
Like, that'll get the house shaking. You get a big enough bird that takes one off the beak, that'll wake you up, or at
and
least
I had
make
a I had a guy in my backyard that was doing some work, and I'm like, "How did this bird like die like that?" And he's like, "If they're going that fast, it's like it's instantaneous."
It's right, like, it's a car crash for them. Yeah. Like they're motoring, thinking they're going right through that thing.
Anyway,
we've all had that type of incident. I had a rental car one time, and we were driving with the young baby, and I can't remember. We stopped at a gas station, and it was when we flew out to Colorado to see Strutty, and there was a bird in the grill of the car, which was tough.
Oh, really? Like, so what, like on the highway you must have taken it out?
And it was like it had wedged itself in there pretty nicely, and then my daughter walked by and was like, "What's that?" And I was, oh, no. Like, I had to kind of dig it out and
noodles.
Out.
I have the King Daddy topper.
That's
I got
tough.
The King
that's
Daddy
tough.
Topper.
What do you got?
My brother played Junior B in Aurora for the Aurora Tigers.
Yeah.
Or the Aurora Eagles, they were called. And my dad called home after one of his games, and he's like, "You guys have to come and pick me up." And we're like, "Are you okay?" And he's like, "I was in an accident." We're like, "What happened?" He goes, "I hit a horse."
What?
Yeah. He had a work.
How do you hit a horse, dude?
I don't want to laugh, like, because
dude, I'm not. This is
Amish
not
country?
A joke. My
is he Amish? Is your dad Amish? Be honest.
He hit a horse. Like, a horse would be crossing the road on the back roads, or like.
Jamie, I'm not kidding. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. He's like, "You guys got to come and pick me up." He had a work van, like a GMC van that could run over everything, and he called us, and he's like, "A horse ran out in the middle of the road, and I hit it. I hit a horse."
Oh. That would be.
And people told him, they're like, "Dude, if you were in a small car like my mom had, you were gonzo."
Oh, dude, that's big. Like, in the rest of the country, you don't see it in Toronto, but like, if there's a moose track, like a moose is crossing the road, you hit a moose, you're gone. Like, you're gonna take him out at the legs, and that thing is like a ton, and it's landing on you.
It's scary, too, because that's out west. Like, you're driving through the mountains
right.
in B.C. and Alberta. Like, there are, you know, moose that are crossing the road, and they are houses. It's basically
monsters.
Equivalent of hitting a house. Like, it's scary stuff. You know, we're not making light of it. Like, that type of stuff is, like, I get it. Like, a bird, unfortunately, flies into your grill or something like that. But, like, these massive animals, like deer that are crossing the road, it's scary. I used to drive home from New York to Edmonton my first 5 years. Like, at the end of the season, I would drive, if I bought a new vehicle.
Me too. I would drive back to Carolina, okay. Toronto every year.
So that's 45 hours from New York City to Edmonton. And I would do it. I would try and do it in 2 days, but usually I would do it in 3 days. 3 days of 15. And I'll never forget, I had a sports car, one of these Nissan 300 ZX. Do you remember those old, like, they were nice.
Just
I bought
had a
it
muffler in, on it.
Oh, yeah. 1991 ZX, twin turbo, had a Steve Millen exhaust system on it. And Rockford, Illinois, I'm coming around the corner, and there's a raccoon in the middle of the road, like, standing there on its hind legs. And I kind of swerve, and I clipped it, and I ended up stranded in Rockford for a day because it blew out my
Can't swerve, man. Any kind of animal like that, you just got to say, sorry, bud, game over.
Yeah.
Oh, it's
Rockford,
terrible and scary.
Home of Fred VanVleet, I believe. Pretty sure
is
Fred
it?
Is from
really?
Rockford, Illinois. Yeah,
well,
you should have found Fred.
There was a guy that put me back together. Like, the next day, he was gritty. Like, it was like the car got towed to the garage. And within, like, 4 hours, he had everything fixed the next
That's
morning.
That's the move,
impressive.
Man. That's the move. You get someone that knows what they're doing, they'll get you back on the road. And
Yeah.
Oh, you mentioned Carolina, and you want to be called iDog today because today is the 18th anniversary of you scoring the OT winner against the Leafs in Game 3. And was that in double overtime or
– Single.
Single overtime.
Well, walk me through the scenario because I've heard people talk about it. I think I remember it, but I was playing at the time or in the league at the time, so I wasn't paying that much attention to it, but it's obviously ingrained in people's minds. What happened that game? How'd you get hit in the eye? What were you doing? Walk us through it.
The one thing I'll always remember, Jamie, is like Shane Corson was like a warrior and he was a competitor and he wouldn't
absolutely.
He looked at me when I came back. And he was like, Jesus, man, are you okay? Like, this is in the middle of a playoff series. And I was like, I guess so. I don't know. Like, for a guy to say that in the playoffs, nobody ever says that. And that's when I knew my eye looked like garbage. Brian McCabe took a slap shot, old ugly face there. And he was trying
to,
ass face, took a shot and tried to clear the puck, and it hit me right in the eye. And I was like.
Like, no deflection or straight out?
No, he was killing a penalty, and he tried to ice it, and he hit me right in the eye. And I was like, man.
Like cheekbone, where, like, orbital? Like,
right in my eye. And I just remember the trainer was like, no, nothing broken. But he was like, I don't think you can play, man. He goes, this is getting pretty bad. And they had to stick needles in it and get the blood out. And I'm like, I'm not coming out. I'm not trying to sound like a hero, but I was like,
yeah.
This is Stanley Cup playoffs. I'm playing. Like,
yeah.
So what period was that? Was that early in the game? I don't remember that either.
I don't remember the play,
detail.
To be honest, yeah.
I've seen the picture a million times. I was watching the game.
Yeah, that was the first period.
Yeah. And then he scored the OT winner.
I probably missed the rest of the first period and then came back in the second. And it was the worst feeling because I'm like, you know when something happens like that, your whole face is all jammed up and you're like weird and you're like, you don't feel like your face is normal?
Yeah.
And I was like, I couldn't see properly, and I didn't feel right. And then I mustered up a way to score in overtime and win it. That was kind of the end of the story.
Your adrenaline would have been going. Like, I guarantee you, on the bus after the game or even maybe the next day, you were like, oh, my God, I'm in pain or whatever. Like, a lot of times through an injury, you play through because your adrenaline just kind of almost drags you through it.
Yeah.
But the minute that comes down, I can imagine you probably had a rough night's sleeping that night.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was a way around that, but.
Yeah, you won the series, right?
No, that was only game 3. I mean, you guys were only up 2-1 at that point, right?
Yeah, well, there was probably a couple cold beers at the Westin down there in Toronto to ease the pain of that one.
Yeah, the guys say you ice internally. That's the internal ice.
That was a big goal, though. That was on Cujo, too. And, that was because I remember the mentality of as Leaf fans, I mean, with all due respect to Carolina, Leaf fans were thinking, this is ours.
You're right.
Like, of course, of course you're beating Carolina. Like, just because Carolina was not a team that got a ton of attention,
yeah,
you guys were a team, like, you were on the team.
And Hayes, I was glad we had no crap disturbers on our team, because I watched the Islanders-Leaf series before they met us, and I was like, this was a goon show. Like, the Islanders and the Leafs were killing each other, and I'm
every
like,
night.
We can't play against these guys. They'll kill us. We don't have these type of guys. Like, we didn't have a Roberts. We didn't have a Tucker. I'm like, we can't get involved in this garbage. They're going to kill us. And we just kind of let them sit back. We didn't bother anybody, and we shut them down, and it was over. I couldn't believe we beat them. I thought they were going to crush us.
Yeah, they were obviously a really good team. They weren't the best team in the league. I mean, and Toronto would have got smoked by that Detroit team. Like,
no,
they were.
But that was their time. They should have beaten us.
That was the best team they had. That team was even better than, I think, the early 90s teams.
Yeah. The way I sum it up, which is a weird thing to say, is they had a way better chance of beating Detroit than we did.
They did. Like, yeah, they would have battled. They were grizzled vets. Like, they would have gone
in. They had more skill. Right. They had more, like, McGillney and Sundin. It's like they would have had a better chance. They should have gone to the final.
Yeah, they did. I mean, but they, like, you guys rolled in there and took control of the series. And you didn't even let it get to seven, right? Like, yeah. you guys closed up the shop early. And winning that game, that was the pivotal game. I think if the Leafs go up 2-1 in the series,
yeah. We just
clearly
crushed
it's
them
very
systematically.
Different.
Like, the Toronto Maple Leafs and Pat Quinn, God rest his soul, I love him. But they didn't systematically, like, they couldn't put it together. We, like, played the trap, and they didn't want to, you know, dump it in. And systematically, we crushed them. Like, that's how we won the series.
Well, Mo was the coach?
No, Pat Quinn.
No, I'm saying your coach.
Paul Maurice was, he was the coach in Carolina. But you, as you mentioned there, like, the style, that's kind of how the Leafs are going to approach everything in terms of the modern era and what we're dealing with here. And I heard Coley Acevedo talk about this earlier in the week, and I do think he's right. Like, a team that is not an upper echelon team, which the Leafs have not been at any point this season, which team could have a shot at taking advantage of the circumstance. And I do think the Leafs are probably at the top of that list or close to it, because they're a team. They're not looking. They don't care for animosity. They don't need anything to be built up. They play a quiet game, and they maybe fold under pressure. And I'm not sure there's going to be pressure if you're in a hub city. You're playing without fans. I don't know if the intensity is going to be nearly as high as it would be in the conventional Stanley Cup playoffs.
What
I could
do you
be
mean
wrong
they fold
on that,
under
but
pressure?
Well, look at the last 3 years in Game 7.
Like,
they,
a Game
they
7,
choked.
You know, like the build-up, the loudness of the buildings. What Brian is saying, the intangibles that come with playing a really high, stressful game would be the crowd, the city, the animosity, all of that.
Expectations, all that kind of stuff. And,
right.
And now it's going to be maybe they're in Edmonton or they're in Vegas, and there's no one in the crowds, and they're playing at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And it's like, just go out there and play. And see what happens. And I think it might turn into a bit of a skills competition because, you know, I don't know if it's going to be as rough and rowdy as it generally would be. Maybe there will be a little bit of trepidation from both sides.
There
I think that would
be.
Benefit the Leafs.
It would. I think I agree with it. My only concern is in looking at last night, like, I don't think they match up well against Columbus. That Columbus team scares me. Like, by what I'm seeing online and all of that, these models, does it sound like the Leafs are going to get Columbus?
Yeah, it does. Based on points percentages, they would be the eighth and ninth seed.
You know, and I'm not suggesting, you know, Columbus does what they did to Tampa, but Columbus has some irritability, but they've got skill too. And it just, Columbus is kind of a moldy team, if that makes sense. Like, they've got some really good players, and they don't give you an inch out there. Now, that's where you've got to stay away from. I think Tampa got off their game. Kucherov got suspended. Hedman was hurt. They were looking for the big hit, trying to out-grit Columbus instead of play them. But Columbus is I don't
like
they're
that tough,
matchup
but like
the Leafs.
I would prefer them over Boston. I mean, let's not get crazy.
Not
a perfect matchup, but I'm not sure if you're going to find one. Because you could say it about any team. I don't know if you want the Islanders. They're tough, like Columbus.
Right, yeah.
The Rangers.
And I said it with Andy. I said it with Andy today, Brian. Any team that gets in could be a problem. Like
of
if
course.
They get a hot goalie.
Any team. Yep.
number one centerman, number one D-man catch fire, you're in trouble. Like,
exactly.
I don't care who it is.
Exactly. Well, and I'm sure Columbus would be saying the same thing about the Leafs. Like, wow, really? We haven't played in 4 months and Matthews and Marner are coming over the boards for 25 minutes?
Freddie Anderson gets hot. Like, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
I agree. Like, the thing is, it doesn't matter who's you're playing. You got to be worried about if your players are either good or out to lunch and vice versa. Like you could say that about any team. Yeah, the Leafs, Matthews, Marner, Tavares, and Anderson and Riley get hot. Great, they're going to roll. Yeah.
Who
can
roll
that tomorrow? We should do it tomorrow. The top 10 X factors if this thing fires up again. Who could be that guy?
All right, we'll get to that tomorrow. Sure. We'll touch on this more throughout the afternoon, this 2014 playoff, which appears to be heading towards a conclusion and an agreement between the PA and the NHL. We'll tell you more about that. Rays coming up. Bob McKenzie later in the afternoon. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. All right, Ryan Rucco calling in just a moment. He's with ESPN, the YES Network. He's got a podcast out with CC Sabathia. We'll talk about that. You guys see that The Last Dance is now officially in the rear view, and almost immediately ESPN promoting a Tom Brady documentary that will be a 9-episode doc. So I'm assuming 9 hours of Tom Brady that's coming out in 2021. And I'm not surprised. I think they realized, you know, how big of a hit this was. If you're going to put content out featuring the greatest of all time, people are going to be intrigued by that. I just can't picture a Brady doc getting anywhere close to the coverage that the Jordan one did for a couple of reasons. One, I hope by 2021 we're not dealing with COVID-19 the way that we are right now.
Right.
And Jordan basically disappeared for 20 years, right? Like, we haven't really seen him. We haven't heard from him. Brady's in our face all the time.
Yeah.
Like, we still see him playing.
When did they start taping this with Brady? Like, when did they start recording?
I don't think it's kind of a recording thing. I think they're going back into the archives, and I'm sure they're going to be interviewing people. I don't know exactly what the timeline is. It's not coming out until 2021, so they're still working on it, clearly.
Would you watch now? I'm sure you would, and we all would, but would you watch it if the exclusive rights were this year, the camera following Brady for one full football season this year?
In Tampa?
Year?
Yeah,
in
I would.
Tampa. See, I agree.
I think that might be almost cooler in a way because, like, I can't imagine there's just been a camera following Brady for years. There hasn't been.
Right.
And the Jordan doc, what became clear was they allowed access for a full year. And as a result, they got audio and video from practice, audio and video from the back rooms, on the bus, on the train, on the plane, on the hotel rooms, whatever. And if you didn't have access to that for the past 20 years, how are you going to get it for a Brady documentary? It's one thing to see game tape and a couple of interviews that maybe we haven't seen for a while, but I don't know. I don't know if the access is going to be anywhere close to what we saw out of Brady, where if you were to do it for this upcoming
season. Tom Brady's going to have to sit in a hotel room every Monday night for the next 6 months and be like, they're going to be like, what about that play right there? What happened there? And he's going to have to tell them what happened. And Gronk, and then, but the thing is, how are they going to get Belichick or anybody with the, you know, New England organization? They're going to say, screw you, I'm not contributing to that. No way.
You're right, but here's the other thing, too. Would you tune in if Tampa is, what, like 7-9 this year? You know what I mean? Like, I tuned in, obviously, to go back into Jordan's career, but it was also amazing to watch them win.
Right. Winning was a part of the ingredient, like a big ingredient for
sure.
Exactly. The fact that you knew that they were winning, so this whole journey was going to see them, you know, start slow, the Pippen stuff, the Rodman stuff, and then eventually they get it done. I do think if it were an upcoming season like this season, and to your point, the Bucs go 7-9, it takes away a lot of it. But it's also Brady. You know, there's very few guys where if you put together a documentary, like they're calling the shot 9-episode documentary. Like that is, this is a new era we're talking about revolving around specific players, and I'm not sure there's many more out there once you get past Jordan and Tom that could give you 9 hours of material and keep people captivated for 9 hours. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, I have to believe there's going to be someone next on the list, and I'm not sure who that is. But maybe our next guest could know that. You know him from ESPN, the YES Network. He's got a podcast out, the R2C2 podcast with CC Sabathia. back on Overdrive. Here's Ryan Rucco. What's up, Ryan? How you feeling about this Brady 9-episode documentary that's coming out in about a year?
Hey, man, I will definitely be excited to consume it whenever it's out. You know, I mean, I think, first of all, there's just like, you know, there's a theatrical touch, obviously, to documentaries, and it allows us to see these, you know, figures that we're really familiar with in you know, sort of a more dramatic light. And you know what? He has a body of work that can easily fill 9 episodes. So I'll look forward to it.
Is Bill Belichick going to enlighten us with his presence on this doc, you think, or Kraft, or are those guys like, you know what, I'm not contributing to that. He's gone now. I'm not doing it.
Good question. Maybe he's already contributed to it without knowing. I'm not sure how they're going about it, but I mean, I would hope after everything that that those two did for each other, if Bill ever wanted Tom in a doc, he'd do it for him, and if Tom ever wants Bill, he'd exchange the favor.
Yeah, I think Robert Kraft for sure. I mean, Kraft is, he hasn't turned his back on Brady. I mean, he got 20 years out of Brady and 6 rings. Belichick is potentially a little bit more jaded and would be closer to the vest, I think, especially considering Brady is still playing. And I believe in 2 years, Tampa is in New England playing the Patriots. So I'm not sure Belichick will be that open to discussing anything that's currently happening. But you would think they'd have that level of respect for Brady. I mean, it's 20 years. 6 rings. Yeah, he left you, but he's still the greatest player in franchise history, and no one's close. But in terms of, you know, where the next documentaries could go, there's a Houston Astros one coming up with ESPN. And I think if there's one team in pro sports that has benefited from the shutdown and our lives just being turned upside down and our focus stepping away from baseball and sports in general –
They got Houston. The ultimate Friday news dump, didn't they?
Big time. Like, who's talking about Houston right now, Ryan? No one even cares about Houston.
Well, yeah, they certainly have been, you know, I mean, they have benefited as from a PR standpoint, certainly, of what's gone on with our world and sports, no doubt about it. You know, I'm sure that, you know, when we get back to baseball and, you know, we allow ourselves to be a little more distracted from the, you know, the greater issues at hand, we'll find ourselves, thinking more about what they did. And as we watch Astros games, and then when the documentary does come out, sign language on Quibi, I'm sure that'll bring it back up. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting, right? Because it was like it was an everyday story for so long. And, you know, obviously there's been only one everyday story ever since, COVID-19 blanketed our planet. So the Astros haven't had to hear much about that because people just want to know if there'll be sports at all.
Right. And they know they're not going to be in the stands either. Right. So, like, even if and when they come back and play in a month and a half, Houston's not got to deal with – they were supposed to be in Toronto this week. They were supposed to be in Toronto earlier this week. And it would have been,
right,
I think, a packed house. And I think a lot of it would have been, hey, we want to go down there and just destroy these guys. And
well,
it's not going to happen.
We were seeing some of that even in spring training, right, guys? Like, you know, seeing the reactions that the Astros were getting, and it was becoming like, you know, either a daily social media occurrence or a daily, you know, Sports Center occurrence, you know, where you were seeing some highlight from an Astros game that really just surrounded the reaction from the crowd to certain players. And as, like, some of their regulars were starting to get in games more. So, yeah, I mean, no question about it. It's definitely, going to be a completely different atmosphere. And you wonder if, you know, by the time, you know, the Astros actually are playing in front of fans, let's say it's the 2021 season, you know, what kind of reaction is there then? You know, I'm sure in certain places, you know, like the Bronx, you know, there will still be a rude greeting, but I'm sure in some others, you know, a lot of the, you know, fire will have been put out.
We're chatting with Ryan Rucco. You can hear him and see him on the YES Network, ESPN, and the co-host of the R2C2 podcast with CC Sabathia. I noticed, and I read a report earlier this morning, that some of the players in baseball, and some of them are willing to put their names on it, are pushing back on some of the health conditions or safety conditions that were put forward by the owners that came public earlier this week, like no spitting, no high fives, no fist bumps. If there's a man on second, you step back 6 feet, and then you hold him to the bag
that,
or first
man.
Bag. I hear you, but this is what I said earlier in the week, and I know it's a cynical view, but I think it's an accurate view. The owners are going to throw everything at the wall at the players and say, here, you want safety? Here's safety. We're going to do this, that, and the other. And then the players are going to fall into the trap and come back and say, well, we don't want that. And now the owners are going to be like, well, we tried. Hey, we did our part. Is it really about safety? Is it really about money? But I totally expected the players to come back and be like, we don't want to play in those conditions. But how do you see that playing out, Ryan? Like, how are they going to handle what the owners are putting on the table and maybe what the players are actually looking for when they get back on the field?
You know, I don't know. And obviously, you know, with all of this, right, there's no blueprint. So we're all just trying to navigate these completely foreign waters as best we can. And, you know, I think ultimately something will get done and something will be agreed upon because there's too much motivation on both sides. And I think both sides have a broader understanding of just how valuable taking advantage of this time is for the sport of baseball. But, you know, what that ends up looking like, I don't know, because I agree. I mean, I was just going through some of the CDC guidelines here for how schools can reopen if they're going to have in-person classes in the fall, et cetera. And I'm like, man, this just seems like tangibly to be able to pull this off, like, you know, students have to keep 6 feet apart. How do you tell a bunch of six-year-olds that they constantly have to be 6 feet apart? Like,
no
it's
way.
Just,
you can't.
Right. Yeah. I don't think you can. And so, you know, I would think that, you know, one thing that we are seeing is, you know, a massive scale up in testing, right? And it's it may have started slow, but it certainly has accelerated exponentially. And I wonder, and this is just me surmising, you know, with hearing hints of medical things, but obviously without being a medical expert myself, you know, I wonder if we get to a point of where you have, you know, rapid test results that are readily available and then have been scaled up, which, you know, may not be too far in the distant future, if you would just say, hey, you know, rather than make all of these exceptions, we are gonna literally swab you when you come through the door every day, like a metal detector, you know?
Yeah.
And I know people have talked about frequent testing a couple times a week, but, like, I wonder if it ends up more than that, if it's like every single day, you know, we're going to test you. Because to me, if you actually can, you know, accomplish that in a time frame that allows for you to have your 82-game season, that ends up much more feasible than trying to implement all of these other aspects within the competition. And, you know, and I think you could feel just as comfortable as you would otherwise. And you know what? You're probably at some point all going to get some sort of a positive test. But if you're testing people literally every single day they walk in the stadium, well, now you have, you know, a much better chance of putting a cap on it once it happens. You know, I don't know if that is, obviously, I'm sure that's something that's being looked at. I don't know what the timeline is on the feasibility of that, but to me, that would be what I would be hoping for, because it just seems like there are some of these things that you just won't be able to really, you know, pull off in order to get baseball.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right on that, and hopefully we get to that point sooner rather than later. You can find him on Twitter, at Ryan Rucco. See him, hear him on ESPN, the YES Network. Check out the podcast, the R2C2 podcast with himself and CC Sabathia. Great catching up with you as always, Ryan. Stay safe, buddy. We'll do it again down the road.
All right, sounds good. Thanks a lot for having me, guys. Do well.
So yeah, I think what he said is about as ideal as you can expect. I mean, perfect
right.
World scenario. We just get rid of COVID-19, but we're not living in a fantasy world. That's not going to happen. But can testing between now and, let's say, the beginning of July, so in the next month and a half, can we get to a point where we're talking rapid tests? Like you're finding out the results in 5 or 10 minutes kind of on the spot. I don't know if that's possible or not, but if it is, I would think the sports leagues would invest in that. They'll pay for it. They'll set it up.
Yep.
And then if you do that and it's like, okay, you walk in the building, everyone's cleared, go play. Like, go do whatever you want. Go hit the cage, high five, hug it out, do whatever you want.
Right, because they've gone through the gauntlet. That's right. The biggest challenge for all of this is testing. If you know what people's status are, and I know they're out there, they're saying, well, there's false positives and you could be a carrier and all of that. But ultimately, if you're going through a gauntlet of tests and everyone's going through that, then you're going to have a level of comfort. And if somebody ends up getting it, then you can identify where the source is within that bubble. So I think it all comes back to testing, guys.
I can't wait for a game or something. I know we have to deal with what's in front of us, and we've tried to do our best, but like testing and that stuff, like those, the terminology, and
it's like when you guys covered the lockout.
Yeah, the lockout or whatever. What were the code phrases during that lockout?
It was revenue sharing. It was cost certainty. Yeah. Cost certainty was a big one. That one always came up, and everyone, that was the mic drop. Like,
making,
oh, I know what
whole,
I'm talking about.
Like,
making whole was a big one.
Yeah. The testing, and I want to be able to say that guy stunk last night or that guy was awesome. Like, I'm so looking forward to that. I can't wait.
I'm hoping and think that that's coming. Oh, I really do. I think it's coming at some point in the near future, within the next couple months. I think we are going to get NHL hockey. Yeah.
Even when it comes back, Jamie, I want to talk about matchups and who's going to do this and who's going to do that. And well, I don't want to talk about, how's the testing or what are you guys doing for test? Or it's just,
I know.
Well, I've just had enough of it.
For 20 minutes yesterday, I felt normal. We were talking hockey with Ray. It was weird. It actually, it got the juices going again. I'm like, yeah, you know what? This team's a good team. What's going to happen here? Like, it actually, starting to talk hockey instead of, testing and what's this and this is a scenario.
God.
Like, it's driving people nuts. I get that. But we're going to have to get through that. That is going to be the new norm. But once we get past that, we are going to be looking at, hey, who played well last night? What's this team looking like?
Let's get the juices flowing here again.
Sure.
All right, we'll come back. We'll get into this 2014 playoff bracket. And I have to admit, I am starting to really come around on this idea. I like it a lot. I'll tell you why. We'll get into where the Leafs might set up and all that. Yep. NHL.com listed their top 16 cup winners since 1967. I've got a gripe with that. We'll get into it. Ray's coming up. We might have some role play level of concern. We got a lot going this afternoon, all right?
Yeah.
Overdrive continues. TSN 1050. Online, tsn1050.ca. All right, Ray Ferraro coming up in about 20. We may or may not get to some role play level of concern. We got some good ones today, too.
Yeah.
But we might save it for tomorrow. We'll see where
I thought they were really good.
There's some pretty good ones. The one that
I'm playing. Why aren't we doing it today?
Well, we can do it today. If you guys want to do it, whatever. We'll do whatever we want.
The last one.
I love the one. That last one. My last one is going to be an all-time great role play level of concern.
I thought that was funny.
It is good. So we'll probably get to that into the next hour. But this 2014 playoff bracket for the NHL, it appears to be moving towards the finish line. Nothing is set in stone at this point, but it appears to be happening, and it sounds like the top four teams from each conference are going to have a bye. So you're going to have 5 through 12 competing in some sort of a playoff round, whether it's best of 3, best of 5, I don't know, and they don't know yet. But that would lead to the Leafs playing Columbus, based on the current standings and point percentage. And then the winner of that would play Boston, of course, once you get into the full playoff round. But that is subject to change as well, because the insiders are reporting that maybe the top four seeds will play each other in kind of a mini tournament that could affect the seeding in the end.
To reseed. Yeah,
to reseed that top four.
Yeah.
Which I really like. And I got to be honest, I'm remembering what I said when we first started this whole endeavor like 2 months ago, more than that.
Right.
And I said at the time, take advantage of this unique opportunity. You're never going to get it again.
Yep.
And that's a lucky thing. I mean, we don't ever want to be in this position again. But I said, and I remember it the first day back, I said, if they don't do something crazy and if they don't get overly creative here, I'll be disappointed. This is creative. This is different. I don't care about the asterisk garbage. I don't want to hear it from people.
Right.
Will it be a different cup journey? Of course it will be, but we're living in a very different world. And I love this idea. The more and more I think about it, the idea of having 24 teams, I'm all for it. Like, yeah. there were still 12 games left in the regular season. A lot of things could have happened, so you have to consider that. Yeah, we keep focusing on the Habs. Of course, the Habs were going to miss. Right. They were going to miss. But the other teams weren't necessarily a lock to miss. So why not expand it to 24?
There's going to be an asterisk anyway, so why not just have a wild card? Yeah,
go for it. We want hockey. You want more hockey. You want a different setup. I think once we get it going, I'll bet you there's going to be a ton of anticipation for it.
Yeah,
I am starting to really come around on this idea. I like it. I hope it happens, and I look forward to it. A conventional 16-team playoff, to me, I don't have any interest. I don't. It's weird. I don't want to see that happen now.
But you're right, Brian, because this is such a unique scenario. Why not think outside the box? Everyone's going to complain. Like, I'm sorry. Not everyone's going to complain, but there are going to be people who have problems with it. Like, this is stupid. This isn't that. But ultimately, to me, even if they had 20 teams, I looked at the 20-team scenario last night, and I looked at the 24. I like the 24, and the reason being, yes, the Habs in Chicago are kind of the outliers, but you're not jamming up Winnipeg, and you're not jamming up the Rangers. Those are two, like, teams that had 10 to 12 games left that probably would have made the playoffs or could have, you know
what I
mean?
Could have made the playoffs, for sure.
Winnipeg, for sure. I think the Rangers may have ended up on the outside, but they were on a heater, like Strome and Zibanejad. Like, they're a good team.
If they got in, it would not have shocked anybody.
Right. So what I'm saying is, instead of, like, focusing on the one or two teams that are like, and everyone's like, everyone's afraid of Carey Price. Well, they could be afraid of Frederick Anderson. They could be afraid of Bobrovsky. You could be afraid of Hellebuck on the other side. You're going to be afraid of anything because anything's going to go. And I think, to your point, Brian, where there's 10 to 12 games left in the regular season, there would have been one storyline where a team went on a heater and squeaked in that last
easily,
game.
Easily. So, and there would have been a team that would have dropped
exactly.
On the flip side of it. So be lucky that you're in.
Right, so all you're doing is taking that mess out and putting something else in, and it mess is the wrong word, but this is creative. I like that there's the only thing that, and I think they've thought about this, is those top four teams are going to play some form of hockey that is competitive, so they're not watching other teams get into game shape, get their timing, and then, you know, somebody gets on a heater and they meet the
I like
the
that
team
idea as well.
Round.
I like that idea as well. Make it a point system and you set it up and you're in the four, but that doesn't mean you're 1, 2, 3, 4 based on points. It means you gotta fight it out in these three games to see who is going to be seeded appropriately. And quite frankly, the top four seeds are pretty much irrelevant because we have no idea who's gonna win the best of three or best of five because there's been a 4-month gap. There's no one in the stands. You're playing in Vegas or Edmonton or whatever. So the idea of being like, I really need that number one seed, I don't think it adds up the way it did in the past. And there's another thing I like about the inclusion of the two teams we keep harping on, Montreal and Chicago. Well, they wouldn't have made it. And you're right, they would not have made it. Montreal had a 0% chance. They were done. Chicago a little bit more than zero, but more or less they were out. What I like about it is there are two markets that deserve it because they're hockey markets. This is a league that has catered to Arizona, Florida, Carolina forever, and I love it that the two markets that are going to benefit from this deserve the benefit. Montreal deserves playoff hockey. They deserve it. Chicago does too. They're great hockey markets. They're original six markets. So I'm willing to say go for it. Get them in. And I don't know if I'd have that same opinion. I really don't know if I would. If it was Arizona and Florida, I'd be like, really? We need these? Like, no one's going to pay attention there anyway. But
no,
you'll get
right.
people paying attention in
you're
Montreal,
right.
in Chicago. And that's a good thing.
And to me, looking at that 20-game scenario that cuts out, Chicago and Montreal, but it cuts out the Rangers. It cuts out Winnipeg. It cuts out teams that
– 24
like
teams,
I said,
baby. I love it. I think it's a great call.
I'm fine with it. And you're right. It's big markets. You need Montreal involved. You need Chicago involved. Like, they're trying to make money back. Why not have these massive hockey markets, like you say, that are storied and have given us good hockey and good storylines and great fan bases and all of that? Have them involved. And if one of them goes on a heater, so be it. But if they bow out in four games out of five or whatever, They're slotted where they probably should have.
Well, like, and that's another thing. This idea that you're scared. Like, really? This is professional sports. For starters, I don't really believe it. I think GMs might be because they thought, okay, here, I'm on my way to a bonus. I'm on my way to an extension. But the idea that players are going to be scared, like right now, the way it would set up is, I believe Pittsburgh would be playing Montreal, I think. Do you think Sidney Crosby's scared of Carey Price? I don't.
No.
I think he respects Carey Price, but do you really think Sid's like, I don't know, maybe it's not worth my time. Carey's going to stand on his head for 50 stops a night and we're just going to lose, so maybe I'll just stay out here in Nova Scotia. I don't buy it. I think they're competitive and they want it. And they're like, Montreal and Chicago will be heavy underdogs. Like,
sure,
they're going to have to really kind of shock the world. Doesn't mean they can't or they won't, but let's not pretend like, just because we're into some new scenario that all of a sudden it elevates the true nature of the team.
I think it's ridiculous. I think it's fan-driven and it's media-driven. I don't think it's player-driven.
No, it's not player-driven.
It's not player-driven. I think it's storyline-driven where people are like, well, Carey Price can steal one. Yeah, he can, but so can Tristan Jarry. So can Frederik Andersen. So, like, these goalies are all good enough to steal, and they're all good enough to crap their pants, too.
It can go both ways. Out west, it would be Edmonton taking on Chicago. Like, that would be a fun series. To see McDavid and Kane go at it for a 3- or 5-game series would be great. But I don't believe McDavid's scared. Like, you really think Connor McDavid's like, I don't know, man. Like, who's even in net in Chicago? It would be Corey Crawford, I guess.
I guess. You know what the thing is they just want to play.
They want to play, and everyone wants them to play. And anyone complaining and doing the asterisk garbage before we even get there, it's infuriating. Yes, it's going to be different. It will be. But it'll be a fun journey, and I'll guarantee you by the end of it, we're going to say, you know what, that was pretty cool. And that was tough. Like, if they're really playing, and they're playing for real, and the tests are all good, and there isn't some catastrophic event where half the teams get wiped out, it's going to be real. We'll pick up on this with Ray in the next hour. We'll get to a role play level of concern as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.